Welcome to STEM Spots, a weekly science review produced in cooperation with the Missouri State University Department of Physics, Astronomy, and Materials Science.
Hi, this is Dave Cornelison, and you are listening to the webcast version of STEM Spots. With me in the studio today is Dr. Paul Deal. He's an associate professor and the department head of psychology here at Missouri State University. Thanks for stopping by, Paul.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Paul, you happen to have some expertise in IQ tests. And I'm very interested in those and want to discuss those with you a little bit today. When I was younger, IQ was talked about a lot. It was ubiquitous, it seemed like. People knew their own IQ number that they had been given perhaps as early as the third or fifth grade, or maybe their parents knew it. Sometimes it was trotted out for bragging rights. Now we only seem to hear about it during presidential debates. Can talk about how IQ is viewed today, sort of what it's looked at as being useful for.
Okay, sure. I agree. I think that current use of IQ or intelligence or the measure of intellectual ability has changed a lot in the past 20 or 30 years, and in that today it's more often used in the assessment where there may be a problem. A child may be struggling academically or having difficulties, and so there may be a concern that intelligence or intellectual ability is to blame or is contributing to the person's difficulties. And so it's often included in a comprehensive evaluation or assessment where a variety of abilities are measured in addition to intelligence. Other abilities like achievement or academic performance, psychological issues, anxiety, depression, attention, motivation, those types of issues. And so generally, at least in my arena, when we talk about the measurement of intelligence, it's related to trying to determine why someone may be having difficulty in some area of life.
Okay, so how about different kinds of IQ? For a while there, certainly in the 90s, people were really starting to talk about different intelligences. They meant, it's not clear what they meant, but for example, in my own life, I find that I'm really good at linear logic, and I'm not quite very good at spatial reasoning. So for example, I could never play chess as well as I would like because I tried to play it through a linear logic method, which for a human being is not the correct way to play chess. So are there different kinds of intelligences then? What is that? Does that mean anything?
I think there's a couple of ways to look at that. One is that maybe contrary to popular belief, there's really not a consensus on what intelligence is. And even within the field of the measurement of intelligence, there's not a universal agreement on what exactly that is. And so current theories are approaches towards measuring intelligence tend to capture a number of different abilities, novel problem solving, acquired knowledge, working memory, processing speed are some of the more common constructs that are included in comprehensive measures of intellectual ability. So if you think about intelligence as a single monolithic construct, it's really not an accurate way of thinking about it. The way that it's measured in a number of these tools and instruments that are used capture a variety of abilities or of constructs. Now, there has been interest in the last 20 or 30 years in measuring other forms of intelligence like emotional intelligence or social intelligence. And so instruments have been developed to try and capture those types of constructs. And, you know, whether or not you consider those comparable to quote-unquote true intelligence is a matter of debate. But if you look at standard approaches towards measuring that particular construct, generally speaking, instruments will try and capture a range of abilities that all are subsumed under that broad heading of intelligence or intellectual ability.
Now, in general, would people see, is the IQ normed for age? Do people see a general deterioration as they grow older? Would that be something that typically happens just because their processing speed gets slower and so forth?
Sure. Most measures of intelligence are normed by age range. And so when you take a standardized test of intelligence and administer it to someone, what is being captured is that individual's performance compared to individuals of similar demographics, gender, age, ethnicity, educational status. So we know that research shows that over time, as people age, abilities change differentially. And so acquired knowledge may gradually increase up until very late in life, whereas abilities like processing speed or working memory will decline. But when you measure someone's intellectual ability, say if I were to test a 60-year-old individual with a standardized test of intellectual ability, I would be comparing that person to other 60-year-old individuals. And so when you measure intelligence, when you measure intellectual ability, what you're getting is an estimate of a person's performance relative to other individuals who are similar to that person. So what we would expect to see is that, generally speaking, everybody declines in particular areas like processing speed or working memory. And so while an individual's own ability might decline, if you measure their broad intellectual ability, you're comparing them to other individuals who are similar, so that their actual number won't necessarily decline because they're being compared to others who also are declining. So say you have someone who is average intellectual ability, a full-scale IQ of 100, which more accurately would be a range of 96 to 104. You measure that person when they're 30. In the absence of any sort of illness or damage to the brain, when that person's 60, they'll probably have about the same level of intellectual ability because they're being compared to other 60-year-olds.
Right. Now, how do you go about it? Because one of the things I used to think of when I was young is, how can anyone design an IQ test that will measure an IQ higher than theirs? So how is this actually done?
Excellent question. When tests are developed and published, what's happened is that basically it's the product of a long process of research where a group of experts, individuals who've been identified as those who have knowledge in this particular area, have worked together to collect a set of items, tapping into these various abilities, whether it's acquired knowledge or novel problem solving, spatial recognition, some of the other constructs that we've talked about. And they have agreed upon what types of items should be included in these various tests. And when those items are developed, they're then administered to a sample of individuals that are presumed to reflect a range of abilities. And through analysis of the items, basically the harder items, the ones that the fewest people get, those tend to be the ones that differentiate those people who are at the highest levels of ability. But I agree, it's a challenge. How can you measure, how can you create an item to measure an ability that's in excess of yours? It's an excellent question.
So what kind of fallout is there? I know that when we were young, somehow I got this number. It wasn't actually an IQ test I was given. It was some sort of an achievement test that they then correlated, and there was an IQ number. And I don't know if my mom let it slip once or something. And it was high enough that I was not unhappy, I guess. But obviously there can be fallout, sometimes both ways. There was this whole big push in the 70s and 80s to join Mensa and for people to collectively bill themselves as high IQ people. And then, of course, there's a lot of stigma associated when people think that their IQ is significantly below average. So what kind of fallout is there, and how do you guys sort of account for that?
I agree. I think that in the absence of a good amount of education and feedback, that the potential for an IQ to have negative consequences is very real. Today, as I mentioned previously, these tests are utilized when there is the belief that there's a problem, that someone's having a difficulty, whether it's academics or vocational. And so trying to determine if intellectual ability might be in some way associated with that difficulty. And so measuring intelligence is part of a more comprehensive assessment that's included where there are is the belief that there's a problem. But it also can be used to allocate resources. And one of the ways is placement and gifted programs. For a long time, kids that were in K through 12 were placed into gifted programs if they had an IQ score that exceeded a specific cutoff. And so kids that are in gifted programs get stuff that other kids don't get. And so measuring that intelligence or intellectual ability is one way to allocate scarce resources. Not everyone gets to be in the gifted program, a certain subset of students in schools. So the potential negative consequences are if a kid, or more likely a parent, wants their child to be placed into a gifted program, and the child takes a test of intellectual ability and they don't exceed a particular cutoff, well, the child knows that. They know that they didn't make the cut. And so expectations for that individual, both their own and maybe parents or teachers, can be influenced by that particular number. So there can be pretty serious consequences.
Now, in your own career and the things you look at, have you paid attention at all to these people that say that they can change this? So, for example, there were a lot of programs that came out in the 90s where they were pitching to parents ways to get their six-year-old to read at 12-year-old levels and things like this. There were all sorts of not exactly self-help courses, but there were methodologies by which you supposedly could make things happen that seem unreal. And so for a while, a few years back especially, there were a lot of people who claimed that with some special neural, let's say, exercises, you could enhance what was supposedly God-given or something like that. So have you seen any evidence that people can do things that will enhance their IQ?
I think it's certainly possible to improve certain areas of intellectual ability. One of the components of intelligence, commonly measured components of intelligence, is acquired knowledge. That tends to be a fairly significant component of a lot of tests of intellectual ability. And so simply acquiring more knowledge, learning more information, intelligence is a malleable construct. It certainly can be improved in some ways. I think that some of the claims that have been made by commercial providers of these trainings may be a little overstated. And all of the research that I've seen suggests potentially you might have some short-term improvement associated with some of these trainings, these online websites that tout the ability to improve your intelligence. I think there might be some short-term gains or benefits that are associated with those, but I'm not sure that there's been any data collected showing long-term permanent gains associated with those types of brain trainings. Certainly in the absence, I mean, if you continue to engage in those types of tasks or activities, then yeah, I think that you'll see continued improvement, but I'm not sure that they result in any sort of permanent long-lasting changes.
But from an intelligence point of view, you say acquiring knowledge, which of course people do or don't do, as the case may be. What about things like, for example, with me, with this idea that I have, I'm not as good at spatial reasoning as I would like to be. Would, or have you studied, or have you looked at studies where people say, okay, they're given a lot of puzzle solving, and then they're tested again. So in other words, they really make an all-out effort to, let's say, work on these kinds of things. And that's, of course, people talk about how they encourage people to always be intellectually curious. So if I were to do something like that, is it possible that I could sort of make my brain better at it?
Sure,
presumably?
Sure. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that anything that you do that challenges yourself intellectually, I think can have certainly short-term benefits, short-term improvements.
Right.
I think that, you know, in your particular case, if you were to continually engage in those types of problem-solving activities that target what you perceive to be a particular weakness, I think you could show some improvements, certainly in the short term. But I think it also would necessitate you continuing to do that over time. I don't think you could do like a week-long training and then that would be the end of it. You would see some improvements in the near term, but in 6 months, you probably would be back to where you started.
Right. Now, how about the future? So we know what the IQ test supposedly was for sort of like the last 100 years. You go into a room with a number two pencil, the doors are locked, and you're given this battery. Is that what it's going to look like in the future, or what kinds of things might happen?
I think that at some point, and you know, is this 10 years, 50 years, I think that technology will reach a point where it's possible to measure the underlying physiological processes and activities in the brain that are a direct reflection of intelligence or intellectual ability. Now we measure it indirectly. We do like what you described, put somebody in a room, give them a pencil, have them work on tasks, and then we compare their performance to other individuals and determine, are they high, are they low, are they average? I think that we will, in terms of imaging, maybe MRIs or other types of imaging techniques, get to a point where we can directly measure how quickly, efficiently the brain processes information and get a more direct measure of intelligence. I don't think we're there yet, but I think we will be there at some point.
And of course, when you talked about mostly IQ tests being now used as an intervention technique, wouldn't it be then something where people would say, I must improve this, and so maybe there are other ways, therapeutic ways to actually, well, I don't know, make your neurons fire faster or whatever it is that's necessary? Is that something people were looking at, do you think?
I suspect there are researchers around the country and the world right now who are looking to see, is there some sort of direct intervention that can be developed? I think a lot of the activity or a lot of the research looking at various compounds to target dementia, to target Alzheimer's, to try and forestall or reverse cognitive decline associated with those diseases, I think that's probably where we'll see the most progress in terms of developing compounds for individuals who don't have anything wrong with them, but who might possibly want to have an improvement in their ability. But again, I think we're still a ways away from that.
Right, right. Well, Paul, thanks so much for stopping by and chatting with us about it. I really appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Once again, this is Dave Cornelison for the webcast version of STEM Spots signing off.
STEM Spots is available online at ksmu.org.